W.A. Cogan, the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated.
This morning, the court has two clauses on its oral submission docket. In the order of the presentation, they are Collinsworth General Hospital and Texas Employment Commission versus Fredonia Honeycutt from Collinsworth County, and Kelly Coppedge Incorporated versus Highlands Insurance Company from Tarrant County. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument. These arguments are being taped by the clerk of the court, and you may purchase a copy of the tapes for a small fee. The court is ready to hear arguments from petitioner in Collinsworth versus Honeycutt.
May it please the court. Mr. Tony Eterno and Mr. Keith Davis will present arguments to the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Eterno will open with the first 8 minutes. Mr. Davis will also present the rebuttal.
May it please the court. It is the position of the petitioners that the Court of Appeals incorrectly determined when an employee's misconduct is connected with the work under the Texas Unemployment Compensation Act. The petitioners assert that the Court of Appeals further imposed an erroneous standard to determine whether such conduct is connected with the work under the Act. Briefly, the facts of this case are that Ms. Honeycutt worked with Collinsworth General Hospital in the custodial staff. In doing her duties, she was allowed to and frequently was in various parts of the hospital unsupervised. While off duty, she initiated and instigated a fight where she used a box cutter as a weapon and slashed another person.
She initiated the fight?
Excuse me?
So she initiated the fight?
Yes, she did.
I thought she got a phone call from her husband, Paramore, and then she went over there to take care of business.
Yes.
But she did not initiate the fight.
Well, she went over to the house.
But she was provoked.
Though the facts did not reflect that there
go
was
ahead,
any kind of a physical.
It. Just move on. Just concede that and let's just move on.
Okay. Yes, you're right. She was arrested, charged with, indicted for, and pleaded guilty to the felony of aggravated assault.
Let me ask you quickly about that. It was my understanding, was it that after the plea that it was actually not for a felony? Did she plead guilty or was she actually convicted of a felony?
Yes, the felony of aggravated assault.
Okay. I've been led to believe by the opposing side that she was not actually convicted of a felony, even though she was charged with.
I believe the records reflect that she pled guilty, and the record contains a lot of the paperwork that she signed.
Deferred adjudication. It was deferred adjudication, so it's possible that that.
I think that was, yes, at the time when she did it, yes.
If we hold the case long enough, it will go away.
I'm not familiar with the criminal law in that regard. The hospital's policy had a section entitled immediate discharge. And two of the justifiable reasons for immediate discharge, one was performance of malicious or destructive acts harmful to persons, and the other one was a serious violation of hospital rules or breach of accepted standards of conduct.
Yeah, I'm not clear about the hospital's position there. There's a lot of reference to the labor code and the standards by which someone can be discharged and not draw unemployment compensation. Now, is it your position that the hospital's policy manual somehow changes the outcome, or is it your position that the policy manual is consistent with the labor code? The labor code says it's got to be connected with the work. The hospital manual, seems to me your argument is it doesn't have to be connected with the work, and I'm not clear what your position is.
Well, ultimately, our position is that the employer, in order for the off-duty conduct to be connected with the work under our position, the rules have to be somehow reasonably connected with the obligation that the employer has in the discharge of its business. And in this case,
well, let me see if I can clear this up. Can I, as an employer, have a policy that I will not tolerate criminal conduct by an employee on or off duty, and if I learn of criminal conduct off duty, they will be fired? And if that's in my policy and in my manual, then does that mean they are not entitled to unemployment compensation?
The cases that we cite show that if that off-duty conduct has a reasonable relationship to
No, that's not my question.
But
my
if
question,
it doesn't, then
you my question is, I just say you can't have violent conduct off-duty or you're fired. Does that mean that they are not eligible for unemployment compensation?
Yes.
Okay. So you, the connection in connection with the work is not really relevant to your inquiry here. The hospital had a policy. You cannot commit a violent, vicious act on duty or off duty. If you do, you're fired, and they are not entitled to unemployment compensation. And that's your position?
Well, now if I can backtrack a little bit. Our position is that the work-related, rule of the employment and the off-duty conduct should have some kind of a reasonable relationship. In this case...
Now, the labor code requires this.
The connection with the work, yes. That's what the labor code requires.
And so, I go back to my same question. The hospital acknowledges that she's entitled to unemployment compensation if this violent act was not connected somehow with her work. They're not arguing that it was simply a violation of hospital policy.
Right. The commission determined that there was a connection with the work with regard to the policy and law.
And you don't disagree with that application of the law. You just argue that the violence was connected with the work.
Yes, in this, yes.
What was the connection?
Well, the hospital's position is that Ms. Honeycutt, as a supervisor, was going through the hospital, and she was alone many times because she was the supervisor. And the hospital's concern was that someone who had committed this kind of conduct, whether on or off duty, posed a concern to the hospital with regard to having her around people that are, you know, obviously sick and infirm.
She had worked at the hospital 20-some-odd years.
Yes.
20, how many years?
I think 25 years.
And she'd had responsibilities similar to what she has now?
Yes. Yes.
The Court of Appeals described the incident as a crime of passion. Do you disagree with that?
I disagree, Your Honor, and that was why I answered your previous question in the same manner. Although she received a phone call and went over to that woman's house, she had the box cutter in her pocket. She talked to her on the phone. She got in her car, drove over. I just have trouble concluding that was just an outburst of passion.
She had been working with the cutters at home.
Yes.
So connection with work, if somebody does something like that on a Saturday morning, liable to do it at work, or is it the reputation to the hospital in a small community of somebody like that working there?
That was something that came up repeatedly in both the administrative process and in the trial court, and the people at the hospital consistently asserted that they were worried about the safety of the patients in the hospital and her being around these people. The issue of the reputation of the hospital and the bad press did come up, but always the hospital stood their ground on that.
So it wouldn't be that if this hospital was in Houston, it would be a different result in your opinion?
No, I don't think so. Houston Hospital would also be concerned about the safety of their patients, which is what Collinsworth was concerned about.
Do you disagree with the Court of Appeals decision that the Nelson case sets out the test used by the majority of jurisdictions in interpreting this type of statute?
Our research shows that's correct, that the Nelson case does not represent the majority. As a matter of fact, one of the cases that the Court of Appeals cited, one of the jurisdictions that the Court of Appeals cited, was a jurisdiction that we cited to support our proposition.
What is the majority rule in interpreting the connected with language that's found in these unemployment statutes?
It seemed to be well stated in the O'Neill case, basically that a rule laid down by the employer governing off-duty conduct must have a reasonable relationship to the employer's interests in order that the, you know, the violation will constitute misconduct. And that seems to be, from our research, what
does,
most of it...
Does there have to be a rule then that is violated by the employee, and it's the rule then that must be show the connection between the off-duty conduct and the employment? Is the rule the fundamental, the linchpin in this?
It seemed, and in this case it definitely was, it was a violation of a policy or rule adopted. I don't think that that should be the case all the time. I think certain behavior should be assumed not to be conducted, and an employer should expect employees not to engage in. I don't think every activity.
How would you define the test that you're asking us to adopt to define connected with in the statute?
The test that we are suggesting is probably, once again, stated best in the O'Neill case, which is that the activity must have some reasonable relationship to what the employer's activities are. In O'Neill, it was a postal worker who engaged in some illegal activity. In some of the other cases, it was a trucking company not wanting their employees to be convicted of DWI. In this case, it's a hospital not wanting their employees to engage in violent behavior. And that's what we should.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. If I may, of course, I represent Collinsworth General Hospital, and I would just like to address the specifics to the hospital. First, the nexus with the employee's work. Of course, as Mr. Eterno stated, the Collinsworth County personnel policies stated that the sort of act committed by Mrs. Honeycutt would result in immediate termination. And the reason that's so important in this community is that it's a small hospital, it's a small community, everyone knows everyone. It's very important, it's vital for the hospital that everyone have confidence in the employee. And so the connection there is the fact that it's such a public position, everyone knows everybody, and so if there's...
What if you had an employee who took an unpopular position, they were a socialist, or they had a notorious relationship outside their marriage, and they didn't violate any law, but it was so repulsive to the small community that people didn't go to your hospital. Would they not be able to get employment?
There's a possibility in the small community that could be a problem, certainly. If, for instance, if there was a doctor or a nurse that was involved with a much younger woman or much younger man, and there's a possibility that people in the community would not want their children around that individual.
So the Attorney General's position that this is primarily a question of the safety of the employees, of safety of the patients in the hospital involved?
No, that is a combination of safety as well as the well-being of the employer. If a person who is known for violent acts is working at that hospital, the hospital can't survive because we'll lose the confidence of the people who have loved ones in that hospital. And also, yes.
Does anybody question the hospital's right to terminate an employee under these circumstances?
No, Your Honor. No one is questioning that right.
The only question is, after you do this, is that employee entitled to unemployment benefits under the legislative scheme, isn't that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so how does that connect with the legislative scheme, or are they two different things and the focus is wrong?
Your Honor, the hospital takes the position that they should not be in a position of dismissing someone and then paying unemployment compensation and then paying another person to take that individual's place. In other words, the individual who committed the act gains benefit from the act in effect.
Well, it just affects your rate. You don't pay unemployment directly to the discharge.
Your Honor, there is a surcharge for that unemployment.
I understand there's an economic detriment, but you don't pay whatever the benefits are directly to.
It's a large percentage. There is a notice that we receive, and we do have to pay a lump sum. Yes, Your Honor.
How much do you pay?
I believe in this case, when we received it, I want to say it was around $2,000, Your Honor. I'm not exactly sure.
One-time charge?
It was a one-time charge in this particular case, yes, Your Honor.
How many employees are in this hospital?
There are approximately 40 employees in this hospital. It's a small hospital.
Going back to your standard for terminating, what violations of the law are set out? How is that described?
Your Honor, that is described specifically as a malicious acts committed against an individual. Excuse me, just a moment. I'm sorry. That it would be specific acts that would be committed against the individual, violent acts. And also a notorious type act, Your Honor.
That's in the manual?
Yes, Your Honor. There are two sections in the manual that relate to this specific matter. Another aspect of this is the liability if an individual commits a notorious act and that individual is retained in employment, then there's potential liability there also if something happened in the hospital where an individual was injured due to that person's act. Another aspect of the test set forth by the appellate court.
Any other questions?
Help me again to understand your position as to how this attack was connected with her last work. How was this attack connected with? She was angry at the person who was screwing around with her husband.
I understand, Your Honor.
So how's that connected with her job?
Anyone who would commit a violent act like that is someone that we cannot have in the hospital.
I'm not questioning the hospital's authority to fire. That's just a sacred outline. I'm talking about her right to...
Okay.
Unemployment compensation.
Your Honor, there is no direct factual connection. There is none.
If you concede that, don't you lose the case?
No, Your Honor, because the connection is the nature of her job and the nature of the hospital and the community. Thank you.
Any other questions? So this might be a different case if it was in Houston or New York City.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
At the court, Mr. James Rasmussen will present argument for the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think the last interchange kind of exhibits the problem that we see with not following the test that the Court of Appeals has laid down. You would give the employer the power to dictate when unemployment compensation would be paid out, and they could do that through their employee manual. They could do that through maybe even through verbal instructions.
If she'd been convicted of drug dealing?
If someone was convicted of drug dealing?
Your client had been convicted of drug dealing, and there was nothing in the policy manual
about that?
About drug dealing.
And placed on probation, presumably, would she? They would still have the right to fire her, keep in mind. But
do you think she would be entitled to collect some employment benefits?
If it was totally unrelated to the work, yes.
Murder? Murder, same answer.
Well, murder, of course, you're getting to where they're incarcerated and they're not able to show up but for work and appear for work.
No,
and
she didn't get benefits.
For the benefits, if you're otherwise eligible, yeah, I think so.
In fact, it's hard to think of a crime that she could commit, she wouldn't be entitled to benefits.
Well, no, if it was connected to the work.
Or she killed her supervisor.
Right. Yeah. Or did something that that involved the employer's property, like the Ryan case, which was the Texarkana case, stealing the employer's property, or took advantage of the employment relationship, and fraud or something like that. But keep in mind,
even if she killed a former supervisor, that would not disqualify her.
Well, I guess if there's no other facts, no, it wouldn't.
Wouldn't you concede that if there was a problem with drugs and drugs are available in a hospital, that would be such conduct that would be connected with someone?
If the drugs were
no, if there is a drug violation away from the hospital, but part of her job is the handling of drugs.
That would make her unsuitable for that job, perhaps, but not necessarily disqualified.
You won't concede that would be in any way connected with her work?
No, not necessarily. Now, there's a case referred to in one of the briefs regarding a person who's a cashier who committed theft. I think that's kind of a similar comparison. It makes them unsuitable for work, but unless it has some connection to it, it doesn't disqualify them from unemployment benefits.
Well, the connection is you're afraid that if they steal from somebody else, they'll steal from you.
That's right.
And that's not a connection.
That is an unsuitability for work. But keep in mind, the legislature has already said that misconduct's not enough. It's got to be misconduct connected with work.
Wait a second. Let's talk, however, yeah, about what the legislature has said. You don't disagree with what the legislative intent was that was stated in the Ryan case, do you?
The purpose from the Section 1 and 2 of the unemployment? No.
Okay. And there it says that unemployment benefits are basically for workers who are unemployed through no fault of their own.
Right. But I think what that means is dealing with the willingness to work.
Well,
I don't
you say you think you, that's what that means, but
right,
what your thoughts are not based upon anything that else that the legislature has said, is it?
Well, it doesn't refer to criminal statutes.
We'll talk about fault of their own. In other
yeah
words, it is within the grasp of the individual themselves as to whether or not they're going to do anything. Let me read that one
yeah
other passage,
yeah,
and that is that the legislature declares it to be the purpose of the state by this enactment to provide an orderly system of contributions for the care of the justifiably unemployed.
Right.
And that's not what we have here.
I think we do have a justifiably unemployed person. I think that's exactly what we have, because keep in mind, I think when the legislature, and again, this is my thought, but I'm suggesting this to you, the legislature is thinking about the worker as a willingness to work. They're not thinking about imposing criminal sanctions through the labor laws of Texas. I don't think that was a thought that came into it. But the statute later, which talks about misconduct, does talk about an intentional violation of the law as being misconduct. But it said that was not enough to disqualify somebody. They had to have a reason for putting that phrase in connected with the word.
That raises my question. I think the hospital makes a very persuasive argument that this woman should not be working for the hospital, and that the aggravated assault reflects badly on the hospital, and certainly in connection with her work could be read broad enough to encompass that. And, but you do all those things, I couldn't imagine that any sort of crime of any significance would be connected to anybody's work, no matter who they work for. So it seems to me this in connection with work must be for some other purpose than kind of this notion of rewarding them for unemployment. I wonder if the workers' compensation issue is really a welfare provision. They're going to have somebody who's unemployed. They recognize the person's going to be unemployed. Now, who's going to pay for it? Is it going to come out of the general fund, or are they going to require employers generally to pay for this type of individual? And maybe it has nothing to do with the crime that was committed, but I can't imagine a scenario where someone who commits with a box knife slashing somebody, that there isn't an employer in the world who couldn't claim that's connected with their employment. You wouldn't hire a person who had that in their record, and you'd fire a person who had that record immediately, and I couldn't imagine anybody saying that's not the cause. So the legislature put that in there for some reason. Why? Why is that in connection with, I mean, in connection with the work? Why is that there?
Perhaps to put a check on employers. For you can take, for example, murder, and it sounds bad, but if you look at this situation, you look at the facts, you look at what happened here, I certainly don't have any problem with my tax dollars going to pay for uncut unemployment compensation in this case, and I don't with like DWIs and more minor offenses and stuff. So I think that was placed in there to put a check on employers, because otherwise they could dictate whatever they wanted to. They could put down anything, and it would control, if they labeled it as misconduct, performance of the work or cause, and then what meaning would it have? So I agree with you. It means something. I think it's a control with a proper definition, which I hope you'll adopt the Court of Appeals definition, but with a proper definition, it will restrict employers. It's not the employees that are going to take advantage of this. When this is put into practice, it will be the employers who will look at this law and look at what you say and either abuse and manipulate it or use it properly. But I know there will be those out there that will.
Mr. Rasmussen, even in though the test adopted by the Court of Appeal, the first element is that the employee's conduct must have had some nexus with the employee's work. So we're still, and then there are additional elements that are part of the test as well. So we're still faced, even with the Court of Appeals test, in deciding what the nexus is, another way of saying connected with. Is your position then that the misconduct must have occurred actually on the job, on the employer's property, or involve the employer's property? Tell us what test should be used to define that piece.
No.
The nexus or connected with language.
No, it needs to be a concrete, and there's reference in that to be a concrete connection, not just a mere superficial one like suitability for work. They're not suitable because their character is in question. That's not concrete enough. That's abstract. That may or may not be true.
What is a concrete connection?
It has to either occur on the job. It would involve the employer's property. It would affect directly an interest of the employer, something that similar to property, or it would be taking advantage of the relationship of work, using that relationship to gain some advantage you wouldn't normally have.
Let me ask you, said affect directly the employer's interest. Is your additional clause on that it has to occur on the premises, or can it occur off the premises?
I don't think it has to occur on the premises.
I said, why don't the facts fit here as the hospital argument?
Because the interest that they're looking at is a very abstract interest. Let me give you an example from another case. There was a fellow that had a DWI in one of the other cases, and his employer had told him, look, I've got insurance problems, and I can't have you drinking either on or off the job. And he understood that, and that was a special circumstance of his employer, and then he got a DWI. That would fit, but not in this case.
Extrapolate the same facts here, that you have a small hospital in a small town that depends on the trust of its employees for its community people in order to get the business, and so the employer's interest is to have a code of conduct and just can't do these things that reflect poorly on the hospital and the entity, and enforce it. Doesn't it still fit the example you just gave?
I don't think it fits the example, but it does permit what occurred here. Permits them to fire her, which they did. She'd rather be working there right now, but she's not after 25 years. Mm-hmm. But it didn't have a direct. I mean, this is about as far away as you can imagine from the hospital and anything that was direct. Now, yes, we want, every employer wants safety. They don't want their employees running around committing felonies. Nobody knows that. But the question's not whether or not the employer wants that, but whether or not that's going to be a reason to disqualify the person from benefits.
What about a child care worker who either physically or sexually abused a child that wasn't at the daycare center and wasn't related to the daycare center? Would that fall under your DWI example or not?
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a hard one. But I would say that certain person would certainly be suitable. There are certain situations where you have people that are expected to, like police officers, for example. And I would put the child care worker, I guess you're talking about maybe a CPS worker or something.
Or just a daycare center. Or a teacher.
Well, no, I don't know that that would necessarily disqualify them from benefits. If that's justifiable to fire them, they're certainly unsuitable for working, and no one would question that. Some positions, like police, have on and off duty. In other words, they're almost never off duty. And that, you know, might fall into something like that, where you're always expected to be on duty.
What's the DWI?
Because that's the connection to the work. If you're a police officer, you're 24 hours a day. You have a special, maybe a special relationship that ordinary citizens wouldn't have.
So the respondent had got a call at work, and she said, "Look, I got to go. I'll be right back." That might be a different case.
And she left work to commit a crime. It could be.
What if the position of the hospital was, we are in the business of caring for people, and as a result, it's important that all of our employees care for people inside and outside of the employment situation. And within that context, it's important that you're not injure anybody.
I think that is their position. I think that's exactly what they're saying.
Why would that not be in connection with the job? The same way that the employer who says it's very important for your employment here that you not become intoxicated either on the job or off the job, because we care for people. It's part of your job 24 hours a day that you conduct your life in a way that you don't injure others.
It's too abstract, I guess, would be my question. That's like, you know, telling your kids, be careful, and if you have teenagers like I do, you better be specific about it or they'll take advantage of it. It's just too abstract of a standard. Where would you draw the line on something like that?
If this were a physician, if you were on call 24 hours a day, would your position be different?
Yeah, it could be. Like a police officer, or if a doctor was on call, say, for doctors were alternating. I know in small hospitals, they may be a weekend where they're on call. And I think that type of relationship could change that if they're expected to be there. In effect, then they're on duty all the time, I guess.
I don't understand under your theory how that makes it connected, because it's certainly not part of the job. It's totally unrelated to the job. They just have to be on the job.
Well, if they're on the job, it's connected to the job. I mean, that's what my theory is. If they have a relationship at that time, if you walk out at 5 o'clock out of this building and you have no responsibilities, then nothing's left open. Then it's very limited that anything could be connected with the work. But if you're expected to be on call or on duty, it doesn't matter whether you're on the premises or the time. There's a connection. There is a factual link there. The doctor's on duty and he goes out and gets drunk, he's not able to perform, for example.
No, I'm saying something completely unrelated.
It impacts his performance, his work performance.
If he runs off and assaults somebody and comes back, is that impacted at all? Is it on his lunch break?
Well,
I can imagine
a lot of
people's going to say, this is not part of us. We don't know anything about this.
Well, you can imagine all kinds of examples and stuff, but I think on that, if he's supposed to be at work and he runs off, he's supposed to be at work, maybe that wouldn't justify denial of benefits. But he's doing something he shouldn't do connected with the work, in the sense that he's left work where he's supposed to be in order to to do something wrongful, I can see a connection there. Where I don't, Mrs. Turner.
Mr. Rasmussen,
yes.
After the Court of Appeals recites in their opinion that after the incident, Ms. Honeycutt reported the incident to her supervisor. The supervisor took no action.
That's right.
It was until later, where a new administrator came on board, that she was dismissed.
That's right.
What is the time gap between the time she reported the incident and she was dismissed?
I believe it was 4 or 5 months. I think it was from the spring, because she was dismissed in October. And I
so for 4 or 5 months, they had this employee. This,
That's right.
She so there was no immediate dismissal.
That's right. And she did receive a deferred adjudication. There were some questions. She was never convicted, which is not a final conviction as far as criminal statutes. And she continued to serve the hospital until she entered her plea during that period of time.
In her 20 years at the hospital, was this, had she had other incidents like this?
No.
Even remotely opposed to this?
No.
Was it a felony that she pled to?
Yes.
And how long after the plea was she terminated?
She was terminated within a week, I believe, very quickly. I think the plea was entered the end of September, and I think it was like the 4th of October. It was fast. It wasn't much there.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Just to clarify, there was the allegation in July concerning the misconduct, but there was no conviction and no legal action until the end of September. And in October, whenever this came out in the paper that there had been a guilty plea, that's when action was taken.
Just the fact that she was charged with a felony and pled guilty, if she had not. If the charges had never been brought, but there was this conduct, would that have made a difference?
It would have made a difference in this particular case because there was not a general knowledge of what had happened, and the hospital didn't have an understanding of what had happened. In other words, if it had been an incident that had been taken care of and the police officers looked at it, but there had been some sort of self-defense or maybe an instant provocation where she had cut someone, they'd come to her house or something like that, then probably no action would have ever been taken.
So the fact that, because on a deferred adjudication, of course, that conviction will be erased.
Yes, ma'am.
Or maybe it already has been. What would be the result of that? In other words, she will not have this on her record if the sentence is...
Your Honor, she admitted to the facts in the case. In other words, she pleaded guilty to that felony charge, and that was the basis for the hospital taking action, that and the notoriety of the event.
The notoriety is what sets it off for you.
The notoriety plus the knowledge of the facts. The facts were ambiguous. The hospital didn't know exactly what had happened until the plea of guilty was taken. And Mrs. Honeycutt played it too.
But there's no question that she brought it to the attention of the hospital.
She did tell her supervisor, described that there had been an incident. That's correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Davis, this is a small community this hospital's in, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
I suppose they've got a little grocery store down on Main Street someplace.
That's correct.
And I suppose that this was a sacker at the grocery store who did this assault on a Saturday, and that grocery store, is there anything different about that grocery store proprietor's relationship to his or her community that would say that that assault was not in connection with that work, but the assault would be in connection with the hospital work? You understand my question?
Yes, I mean,
how
do.
Is,
yes, Your Honor.
Draw me a distinction there.
The distinction in that particular case is that the hospital, their job is to take care of sick people and not to harm people, but to help people. In this case, Mrs. Honeycutt, as a supervisor, was alone with patients and had a special duty to those patients and to the hospital and was there to help.
But a sacker is supposed to help people. They're supposed to help load the car. They're supposed to be friendly. They're supposed to make people feel welcome coming to the store.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that fact goes out and commits an aggravated assault, and there's a lot of publicity. It's harmful to the business to have this assaulter meeting people at the door and carrying their groceries,
well,
particularly with a box knife when they're unloading a crate of material.
Yes, sir.
Why is that not in connection with that work?
It certainly could be, especially if you looked at a test of misconduct. The hospital would propose that the simplest thing from an employer standpoint, the complex test that's set forth by the Court of Appeals, is very, very difficult to apply. So if there was a simple test, such as if a person commits misconduct as defined in the statutes, then that would be much easier for an employer to apply.
Is the word misconduct defined?
It is, Your Honor, at 201.012.
But it has to be with the individual in connection with the individual's last work.
Yes, Your Honor. And there, under the definition of misconduct, there's going to be very little. If the incident rises to the elevation of misconduct as defined, there's going to be very few instances where it's not going to be connected to work. If you look at the definition.
Any other
questions?
Thank you,
counsel. Thank you.
That concludes the argument. The first call, the court will take it.
All rise.